Well, hey, this is Dave. How are you guys doing?
Hello, Dave. It's Janine. How are you?
Hi, Janine. How are you?
Very good, thank you.
Great. Who else is on board? I know there are a couple of other people on board. I don't have my dashboard active, but I heard there were three. Is Heather here? Okay, we have some lurkers. Okay, we are recording now, so everything you say from this point on is admissible. So, Janine, are you going to introduce me at the top of the hour?
I sure am.
Okay, all right, super. And will you be sure and mention about muting Star 6 for the discussion? I'll have an open line at the beginning and the end for discussion, question and answer. I'll put us on lecture mode when I do the presentation, so we don't have to worry about that. But if I can get people to manage that, and if they're not really, I assume most people, not everyone is, very comfortable with teleconferences, but it's something we just have to note at the beginning. So thanks.
Yes. So are you asking me to tell them to hit star six?
Yeah, just to manage the background noise at the beginning and the end, and mute is star six, and to come back and unmute is star six again.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Or well, if you'd rather me do that, I'll be happy to. Whatever.
I can do it, and you might have to do it as well.
Okay.
We'll see how it goes.
Right. Okay.
Thank you.
Super. Do you have an indication of how many people we are going to have on board?
Let's see. We have 52 people registered, Dave.
Okay.
So.
Okay, super.
Yeah.
Well, we will have the, and I'll mention this, we will have the recordings posted within the next 24 hours after each of the seminars on the page that they received, and the outline is on that page as well.
Okay.
And I'll mention, Heather asked me to mention about the additional bonus that was unannounced, the ebook about mentor coaching case studies that's also on that page. So I'll be sure and mention that.
Okay, great. I'll finish at the end with just reminding people about the recording, a follow-up survey, and a code for them to use for their credits.
Is there a survey at the end of all four?
I think there's a survey after each one, not a cumulative survey.
You're going to hold me accountable, huh?
I think
That's good. That's great. Are you calling from the Boston area?
I am. I'm in Franklin, Massachusetts.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yes. And I went to your session in the summer and really thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, that's going to be a real treat that some of the people who actually came to the workshop are going to be here tonight. So that's great.
Yes.
And thank you for the kind words. I appreciate that.
Sure.
That was a terrific treat for me. It was a great group, really a stimulating group.
Yes. I think people could have gone on for another day asking you questions. So I think there's definitely interest in your work.
I will use any excuse to get to the Boston area.
I know you have family here, right?
My four granddaughters and the serious carpet time I have with those little girls.
That's great.
Hi guys, it's Heather.
Hi Heather.
Hey Heather, how are you?
Good. How are you, Dave?
Great.
Good. We're excited for tonight. Thank you.
Yeah, me too.
Heather, can I clarify something with you?
Please.
We're sending a survey after each session, correct?
No, not a survey. No, we're doing that at the end.
Oh, after the four sessions?
Yeah, we're sending the survey, but we're sending the recordings out in between and reminders.
Okay. So the CEU code is one
code? They'll have to have all four in order to make it work. Yep.
Okay. So they take the final survey and enter the four codes?
Correct.
Okay.
So the quote is really those four words together, correct?
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Sure.
You might mention, Janine, that cell phones and computer phones are not teleconference friendly. They're, for some reason, the technology just hasn't advanced to do that. So people who are on a cell phone or a computer phone especially need to stay muted until they are absolutely ready to ask a question.
Okay.
And obviously, Janine, you'll remind them how to mute.
Yes.
7 o'clock. I'm going to go on mute.
So, Janine, whenever you're ready to go.
Okay. All right. Let's get started then. Hi, everyone. Welcome to our ICF New England teleseminar, Massive Success Strategies, How to Use Influence, Psychology, Persuasion Science, and Neuromarketing to Enhance Your Business. This is Janine DeLay from ICF New England's Professional Development Committee, and I'm happy to join you tonight with Dr. David Krueger. This session is being recorded, and we remind you to please mute your telephones unless you are Dr. David Krueger presenting or if you are invited to participate with questions. You can mute your telephone by pressing *6. So if you could please do that right now, we'd like to get a really good quality recording. When Dr. Krueger invites you to participate, you can press *6 to come off mute. If you are calling from a cell phone, you may want to switch to a landline if you have one available, or if you're using a computer phone as well. Sometimes the quality of the muting isn't as good on a cell phone or a computer phone. In the email you received from ICF with the session details, there's a link there to the class outline for tonight's session as well as the following three sessions, a free ebook offered exclusively to class participants, and a space for us to store the class recordings. So following each session, between 24 and 48 hours, we'll share the recordings there and you'll be able to access them. Now it's my pleasure to introduce tonight's presenter, David Krueger. David Krueger, MD, is an executive mentor coach and the CEO of MentorPath, an executive coaching, training, publishing, and wellness firm. His work integrates psychology and neuroscience with strategic coaching to help executives and professionals write the next chapter of their life or business stories. Author of 20 trade and professional books on success, wellness, money, and self-development, and 75 scientific papers, his latest book, The Secret Language of Money, is a business bestseller translated into 10 languages. A mentor, trainer, coach, and dean of curriculum for Coach Training Alliance, he has been quoted in Money, Fortune, Forbes, Town and Country, The New York Times, and The Wall Street Journal, and was elected to the American Society of Journalists and Authors. Founder and director of his own licensed specialty certified New Life Story Wellness Coaching and New Money Story Mentor Training, Dr. Krueger has trained professionals worldwide and develops internal mentor programs for corporations. I'm almost finished with this biography, but it's pretty extensive and impressive. Dr. Krueger formerly practiced and taught psychiatry and psychoanalysis and was a clinical professor of psychiatry. He was listed in the Best Doctors in America annually for 7 years and was listed in America's Top Psychiatrists. He founded and served as CEO for two healthcare corporations, co-founded a third startup that went from venture capital to merger acquisition, and founded Houston Gathering of Angels, an angel investment group. Please join us for what will be an engaging and interactive workshop tonight. If you've attended Dr. Krueger's work in the past, you'll know that he's no stranger to ICF New England. He came from Texas to give a great session for us last April, and we got such positive feedback on that work that we decided to do this teleseminar for you. So we're delighted to introduce Dr. Krueger and kick off this four-part teleseries.
Thank you, Jeanine. I appreciate it. That's very generous. I want to emphasize something that Jeanine mentioned there at the landing page, where you'll see the four ports for the recordings that will be posted. They're available for online playback and or MP3 download. There's also an outline. Hopefully you've seen that, printed it, and it's fairly annotated so you can follow along and not have to take a bunch of notes. There's also an unannounced bonus. You'll see at the bottom of that a link for a book on that's called Successful Life Story Transformations, Using the Roadmap System to Change Mind, Brain, and Behavior. It's a compilation of 32 case studies from mentor coaching, and I think you'll find it enjoyable if you have a chance to look at that or look at that at some point. You're certainly welcome to do that. And that's, I'll return to that as one of the principles of what we'll talk about. So stay tuned. Okay. First, thank you very much for all of your responses. Those many of you who have responded to those two questions I asked. If we were to sit down face to face, what would be the most important question about this topic you could ask? And if you were to walk away 4 weeks from now, what would you walk away with? I appreciate that. Those responses give me some ideas and will shape some of my discussion, and I appreciate your thoughtfulness in that. Are there any additions to that? Does anyone want to add to that now rather than send an email later? Any discussion or thoughts about those two questions right now before we start? I'll preserve some time at the beginning and the end for discussion, question, and answer. I'll put us on lecture mode in the middle for the presentation so you don't have to worry about the background noise. But remember to unmute *6 when you want to talk. So any other responses to those questions or any comments you'd like to make at the beginning? Well, I'll preserve some time at the end then, and I'll put us on lecture mode so things like that don't happen. So let me just say it's a privilege to be with each of you, and it's a privilege to present to this group. I have a great deal of fondness from the workshop this spring, and I'm honored to do it. So I'm going to put us on lecture mode. Okay, here's the premise and the overview of what we're going to do in these next 4 weeks. Practicing professionals in healthcare, law, finance, accounting, business, and coaching are well educated and trained, but we may reluctantly acknowledge that we're also in business. We're able to help others achieve their goals, but we may still be learning how to translate that into doing the same for our own practices and businesses. Here's what we'll do together in these 4 weeks. Innovative work in the mind and brain sciences help us understand more about the topics of our four seminars on the psychology of influence, the neuroscience of persuasion, mindset mastery, and neuromarketing. To apply each to add immensely to your business success, specifically how these brain-based strategies of the persuasion sciences can generate measurable improvement of engagement and sales for your professional services and products. So this is a system of creating rather than a method of hoping. So we're talking in this seminar on the psychology of influence. So this is from your outline. I'd like to begin with a quiz. This is a multiple choice quiz, as you see in the outline. The American Sociological Review studied the hiring practices of three elite industries, law, investment banking, management consulting firms, to determine the primary criteria for those qualified to make it to the final round of interviews. So what do you think was the premier factor? Their intellectual prestige, where they got their degree, their grade point average, sharing similar experiences as the interviewer, expertise in the specific area of the position sought, or recommendations for the position. Jot down or tick your answer. I'll tell you later. I'll even tell you why I didn't tell you until later. So, influence can simply be defined as to enhance the likelihood of a choice, to heighten the probability of agreement and predictability. Influence moves people to a desired outcome while helping them feel genuinely good about themselves and about you. So here are four questions that I'd like to ask you about the brain science of story. Jot down your answers again. I'll tell you sooner, because the reason I'm holding off on the answers is a neuroscience principle in action. Four questions. What draws you into a story? Jot down a single word, first word that comes to your mind, or a brief phrase. What sustains your engagement as a listener or reader? What are you responding to when a story really engages you? And what determines bestsellers from non-sellers? Now, the hint, all four have the same answer. The answer to all four questions, we must want to know what happens next. A story is hardwired in our brain. It's how we strategically make sense of an overwhelming world and how we remember. For a story to capture and sustain our interest from the first sentence, the reader or listener has to want to know what happens next. When a story meets these neural requirements of novelty and anticipation, it engages and remains successful. I have heard agents and publishers both say that I can tell from an entire book proposal in the first page whether or not we're going to publish it. I've even heard two say I can tell within the first sentence. So, what do you want your reader or listener to walk away thinking about? What point does your story make? Neuroscience reveals that what draws us into a story and keeps us there is the firing of the dopamine system, the pleasure chemical, signaling that intriguing information is unfolding. This is what sustains our attention. So how do you want to change the way your listener or reader sees the world? If the recipient doesn't want to know what happens next, no matter how well crafted, it won't engage. Cisco CEO John Chambers didn't communicate to employees, clients, or colleagues about selling switches and routers. He sold a story, a vision of an internet that changes the way we live, work, play, and learn. Starbucks founder Howard Schultz didn't sell coffee and lattes, but the concept of community, a third place between home and work. And listen to how Steve Jobs convinced former Pepsi president John Sculley, at that time, to become CEO at Apple. They were on a balcony overlooking Central Park in New York City. Jobs simply asked Sculley, "You want to sell sugared water all your life, or you want to change the world?" The essence of influence is based in the brain's need for a story. We have a biology for reciprocation, an innate desire to bond, to connect. Story is an essential element of explanation to bring together and balance the emotional and the rational, both sides of our brain. If your business is not based on a story, you won't have a business. All good stories give a promise in the beginning, a promise that it'll be worth your time. You invite the listener to join the campfire of the story. Once upon a time. Storytelling, like life, has guidelines, not rules. In order to engage a listener or reader, write or tell a vivid story about your service, product, or brand. Include aspects that would activate different parts of their brains. Action. Dialogue, sensory experiences. Nancy Duarte has studied the craft of storytelling and dramatic plot structure. She analyzed hundreds of the most famous speeches of all time and tested different story structures. What she found, I think, is fascinating for us. She discovered a story pattern at the foundation of the most influential speeches of all time. It's a combination of two simple things, what is, followed by what could be, for several sequences. She superimposed the sequence of the patterns of the talks of Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. for Steve Jobs' well-known graduation speaks, for Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, to name a few of the hundreds she studied. Each fit the same configuration pattern, a series of what is followed by what can be. So here's a way to create that influential story pattern. The context, the preface, is that your story has to be in your voice. To create a clear and compelling story about your body of work, find a thread of connection with your audience as you craft specific messages. It has to sound like you're talking, not reading a script. And be genuine, authentic, as if the person is sitting across from you at the coffee shop. Now, for any story, and we're going to use this as we look at how to conclude a conversation with a client about whether or not they engage with you in mentor coaching, how to conclude a sample session if you do it that way. There are three story components of any story, of every best-selling novel, of every coaching engagement, even of a laser coaching session. There are three components: challenge, development, and resolution. These three building blocks are common to all successful stories, from effective marketing to best-selling novels and films. So, as I describe these three story components, think about how you apply them in two ways. Having a brief discussion with a client about your services, and specifically recommending your professional services at the conclusion of the discussion. So let's develop these three story building blocks. One, the challenge. Find the client's challenge, the problem or the pain. Find the deep want or interest that's not fulfilled, what they want but they're not getting. What are they not able to do or be themselves? This is the only thing that clients will pay you for. The foundation of effective influence is to first highlight the challenge or the unmet need. We're going to return to this in a later seminar, but do this very quickly. Draw a circle on a sheet of paper. Draw a circle. Inside that circle, put a stick figure. Now, that stick figure is your client. In order for that client to listen to you, you're going to have to get inside the circle. You can't stand outside the circle and give information, give benefits, give specifics, or tell about how great you are. You're going to have to enter that circle. And the best way to enter that circle is an empathic resonance and understanding of the challenge of that client. So know the audience or client and three things about them: their deepest needs, their deepest desires, and their deepest concerns, and how that manifests into the challenge that's in the foreground for them right now. This is where they are. From this knowledge, describe a situation as the audience knows it. This is a what is. In other words, you're already articulating what they already know and experience. This creates a bond of understanding, a common ground between you and the audience, and readies them to hear your ideas for change. So the what is their challenge. By saying that, you're resonating with their experience and letting them know that you know. Second story component, the development. The development of a story is to move from the challenge to a resolution to their desired goal. For this, it's helpful to know a client's external goal and what achieving that goal means, their motivation. The internal goal involves what achieving the external goal really means and how it fits with their identity. So to further the story development, this middle part of a story, consider from the client's point of view these questions. From the client's point of view, will it give me what I need and want? Will it be worth it? Will I be able to justify it? Do I need it now? The third part of the story, the story resolution. Show them how to solve their challenge, how to address their issue by using your product or service. The mind and brain both seek closure. You help your client clearly and accurately associate a desired feeling or state with your product or service. The resolution needs a powerful ending. Make it compelling and real. They will then authentically associate buying with pleasure and not buying with pain. We're going to return to that in the next seminar. The way our brains work, we want emotionally, but justify logically. The emotional part of our brain makes decisions way faster than the logical part. Find the emotional reason, their reason to buy now. This is their challenge. This is what's in the foreground. For example, notice the first thing in your material about this seminar. I ask the what is. Do you have significant expertise and credentials, but not enough clients? And that was followed by, in the benefits portion, the first bullet, a what can be. You will learn how to systematically shape the primary reason people buy a professional service and highlight what will develop and resolve it. Each of the six bullets of the what is were followed by six bullets of what can be. As you move back and forth between the what is and what can be, you will optimize your influence. Now, how can you apply that? And this is a question that I got from a couple of you who have sent in, you know, what's the most important thing you can get out of this? How can we apply this to recommending your professional services clearly and succinctly? And visualize with me the model of any other professional, a doc, a dentist, a CPA, an accountant. You go in now, it's an imprecise model because this is a consultancy that I'm presenting here, where you go in, you present some issues, challenges, problems, the professional asks some questions, and then makes a recommendation. The recommendation is clear, precise, and definite. Think about the same thing for when you recommend your professional services, and think about doing it succinctly in three sentences. Summarize your client's challenge. This is the first part of the story, the challenge. How you can help the development. And the third story component, the resolution, your mentor coaching recommendations, including the framework and the fee. And remember, do it in three succinct sentences. The fuel that propels these three building blocks of all compelling stories, challenge, development, and resolution, is emotion. The best stories lead with the heart and empathic resonance. You have to get inside that circle first for someone to really listen and connect to build common ground. We'll talk about more in Seminar 3. State always comes first, then strategy and story. Emotional transportation is the complex system of action and reaction that operates within stories to move listeners or readers. The stories that really work transport the listener or reader emotionally. In any business context, if you fail to transport the person emotionally, you'll lose the audience or simply get no response. So now, let's look at four primary tools of influence. And I think in mentor coaching, for our services and products, these are huge. One, the influential story pattern. Why is Apple so innovative? Year after year, they're more innovative than their competition, but they're just a computer and tech products company. They have the same access to the same talent, the same agencies, consultants, and media. So what accounts for their phenomenal success? Why is it that Martin Luther King led the civil rights movement? He wasn't the only person who suffered in pre-civil rights America. He certainly wasn't the only great orator of the day. Why him? Well, it turns out there's a pattern. All the great and inspiring leaders and organizations in the world think, act, and communicate in a similar pattern that's the antithesis to everyone else. A marketing message from computer companies like Dell, Hewlett-Packard, dozens of others is, we make great computers. They're beautifully designed, state-of-the-art, user-friendly. Want to buy one? Now, that's how most of marketing is done, to say what you do, how you're different and better, and then hope people will respond by buying your services and products. But people rarely believe that what we do is as awesome as we believe it is. Okay? Now, listen to how Steve Jobs communicated differently about Apple. I think you always have to be a little different to buy an Apple computer. I think the people who do buy them are the creative spirits of the world. They're the people that are not out just to get a job done. They are out to change the world, and they're out to change the world using whatever great tools they can get. a lot of times people think they're crazy, but in that craziness, we see genius, and we make the tools for those kind of people. In the summer of 1963, 250,000 people showed up on the mall in Washington, D.C. to hear Dr. King speak. No invitations, no website to check the date. How'd that happen? Dr. King didn't go around telling people what needed to change in America. He went around and told people what he believed. And people who believed what he believed took his cause and they made it their own and they told people. And some of those people created structures to get the word out to even more people. 250,000 people showed up on the right day at the right time to hear him speak. How many of them showed up for him? Zero. Well, maybe three. They showed up for themselves. It's what they believed about America that got them to travel on a bus for 8 to 12 hours or more to stand in the sun in D.C. in the middle of August. It's what they believed. And it wasn't about black versus white. 25% of the audience was white. So, no matter how talented, skilled, experienced, hardworking, and unique you are, unless you determine the major factors that influence the ways others think and act, your success will be limited. Now, this does not equate at all with manipulation, but with consistently generating authentic personal and professional satisfaction while making the lives of others considerably better. I've seen some of the most talented and well-trained people in the world with stellar academic backgrounds and exceptional training accomplish barely average results because they did not master people and influence skills that truly resonate to engage others. And I've seen people who master these skills soar personally and professionally. One key principle of influence is from Dale Carnegie. Ultimately, people do things for their reasons, not our reasons. This means that for the ultimate influence, we must first ask the question, what's in it for them? How do you get in the circle? The greatest story commandment, make me care emotionally, intellectually, aesthetically. Now, what I'm about to say is, I think, huge. Numerous studies have the same message. To influence someone, it's essential to connect to their underlying identity. State-of-the-art neuroimaging and cognitive neuropsychiatry and neuropsychology have demonstrated that we create ourselves through narrative. A specific region of the left forebrain specializes in personal self-narrating actions and thoughts. The brain origin of our identity, in other words, our sense of self. Neuroeconomics labs can show people dozens of products and look at the resonance in their brain, fMRI brain image studies, and they can predict when they look at the product that they're going to buy. They can predict which of these dozens of products they're going to buy. It's the one that activates their sense of identity. So, what are your prospects' fundamental ideals and needs? To make them care, you need to know what they already care most about. Home, status, family, adventure, security, mastery. The most powerful stories begin by identifying a core ideal or concern of the prospect. People buy what they identify with. Neuroeconomic studies have shown that the biggest determinant of a purchase decision is when a product or service resonates with someone's identity. This activates the specific portion of the brain that synthesizes a sense of self. So, the goal is to sell to people who believe what you believe, not just to sell to people who need what you have. This is the unstated secret of Martin Luther King, Steve Jobs, Abraham Lincoln. This resonates with their core identity, their why. This is also, by the way, why you bought 10 of your last 10 books. When people feel a unity with others, they feel a shared sense of identity. this principle moves beyond simple similarities to embrace a sense of kinship, of being together, and a sense of unity to sacrifice personal interests for the welfare of the group. Now, here's the answer to quiz number one. Those that made the final round, sharing similar experiences as the interviewer. Just as with purchase decisions, we buy, hire, or affiliate with what fits with our identity. The reason I didn't tell you the answer at the beginning, because it would have created closure in your brain, and you might have left that lie where it was, rather than still having a kind of curiosity, even though it wasn't in the foreground. There's still a part of your brain that wanted to know what happens next. And the what happens next, it's why you began your presentation with a way to engage the audience that may be to resonate with them, to get inside their circle, to ask questions, to begin with their challenges. Think about the first question you ask of a client in coaching. What would you like us to focus on? The next question, what would you like to take away? Notice how those are the two questions that I sent around that some of you, many of you, have responded to. Because in looking at what they want to take away, they with you create a success map. So you together have begun a model of collaboration. That's what makes you different from every other professional who operates on a consultancy model, where you bring a problem, they give you the answer. Now, here's an important factor. Cognitive studies have shown that the message itself is not directly responsible for change. In other words, it's not what someone will say in response to your communication. It's what they say to themselves as a response to the communication with them. The direct result of change is due to self-talk. Think about this and what you remember from a conversation or from something you read, promoting something. What a person says to him or herself after receiving a message is what they remember. You recall the comments you made to yourself much more likely, I would suspect, than the comments made to you. This is another reason, by the way, that we avoid negative messages. Now, I want to add something here about the power of trust. Dr. Robert Maloney, a professor of ophthalmology at UCLA, was the first surgeon in North America to perform LASIK surgery. He had to help his patients overcome their fear of this unknown procedure at the time, which involves cutting a flap in the surface of the eyeball, the cornea. He had to give full disclosure, including negative possibilities that could easily discourage people from getting the procedures they needed, could scare anybody off, all without testimonials of success stories from former patients, because there were no former patients at that time. He listened closely to his patients and discovered that the value proposition they actually cared most about was trust. They didn't want guarantees. They wanted connection. So Maloney began telling his patients, no matter what happens, I'm going to be here to take care of you. Then he'd tell them the story of what he expected would happen with the surgery. He would cover negative information, as he had to, about problems they might have to struggle with, and would conclude his story with a resolution that satisfied their emotional needs. I am never giving up on you. Even if there's a problem, we're in this together, walking side by side. His emphasis, his framework, was the story of relationship and connection. His call to action was for his patients to trust him enough to make their leap into uncertainty together with him. By now, Maloney has personally performed more than 50,000 vision correction surgeries. This, I believe, is what my mentor coaching clients need to sense from me, that I will believe in you until both of us do, and I will walk side by side with you into and throughout your success, no matter what. Trust is the foundation of developing rapport, of creating an influential story pattern. Now, the second primary tool of influence, defining your story. In a dialectic between emotion and rationality, emotion wins hands down. This is basic human nature. Our emotional side is like an elephant, and our rational side is like the rider on the top. The rider holds the reins, looks like the rider's in charge, but if the elephant and rider disagree about which direction to go, guess who picks? 180 pounds versus 12,000 pounds? Slam dunk. The first rule of telling stories, the first principle of telling stories, is to give the listener an emotional experience. The heart is always the first responder, meaning the portal of entry is the amygdala and the midbrain. Metaphor and analogy, the most effective ways of doing that, are building blocks to evoke images and activate memory with all of its rich synergy and emotional association. This brings the listener into the story as co-creator. So, define your story based on what do your followers really need. Define the specific needs of the people you want to influence from your body of work. You've found out because you've entered enough circles and listened to their challenges. You know directly because it comes from them. Include the steps they need to address their problem. What's the first problem they want help solving? Once that's solved, where do they go next? Create a path of steps to help them realize their goals. Help them resolve their problems. Services, products, tools that your follower needs. That's the only thing that people pay you for. Not a pretty website, not initials after your name. Every person and organization on the planet knows what they do. Some know how they do it, but few people or organizations know why they do what they do. And by why, I'm not talking about making a profit, but your purpose. What's your cause, your belief? Why do you get out of bed in the morning? The inspired leaders and the inspired organizations, regardless of their size, industry, or focus, all think, act, and communicate from the inside out. Perhaps more important than achieving a goal is who it makes you become to fulfill the goal. What this tells us is that people don't buy what we do. People buy why we do it. The goal is not to do business with everybody who needs what we have. The goal is to do business with people who believe what we believe. The why is your story and your mission. It should be bold, captivating, inspirational. Marketing and brand loyalty are about emotion way more than reason. Phil Knight, founder and CEO of Nike, said, "You can't explain much in 60 seconds, but when you show a picture of Michael Jordan, you don't have to. It's that simple." Sometimes you can give somebody all the facts and the figures, and they say, "Well, I know what all the information and details say, but somehow it just doesn't feel right." Now, that phrase, "feel right," comes from the part of the brain that controls decision-making, not the language or logic or reason part. Or sometimes you say you're leading with your heart or have a gut feeling. Now, your heart and your gut are not decision-making body parts, but they're metaphors for our limbic system. It's all happening in our limbic brain. Since people respond to why you do what you do, your need to know why you do what you do is crucial for them to want to be part of what it is that you do. Our most, and listen to this because I think this is so important, and this addresses something mentioned by two or three of you in your email responses. Our most immediate intuitive response to someone is based on two things, confidence and connection. Confidence is the perception of strength and capacity to make things happen. It commands our respect. We're going to return to this in a seminar talking about confidence as a state of mind. If you want a little prep for that, one of my blogs is called Confidence is a State of Mind. The blog is, I think, the last tab, and you can go to that archived title at my blog site. Connection now is the client sense that you understand their feelings, interest, and view of the world. Empathic resonance. It means you've entered their circle. When people project this warmth, we like and support them. Strength and connection are complementary, not mutually exclusive opposites. Amy Cuddy at Harvard did seminal work in this area to find that emotional responses to people who project both of these two, strength and connection, strength and warmth, are the most effective and influential. The third primary tool of influence is your body of work. So let's look at that specifically. There are three crucial questions for you to consider. What are your clients' primary needs and challenges? What makes you distinct, unique, and memorable? And what's the premium the client gets by doing business with you? Why you more than, 10,000 other coaches? The sciences of mind and brain show us how good communication involves four elements. And this is in one of the Bibles of writing. Clarity, brevity, simplicity, and humanity. It's also the four elements of good speaking. And remember this when you even simply ask a client a question. Clear, brief, and simple. This is how language works best in speaking and writing. When Maurice Sendak wrote his book, Where the Wild Things Are, he worked for 10 years on a book with 338 words. Now, I've been accused of approaching that number per sentence. Now, for example, when he's ready for the action to begin, he states very simply and vividly, let the wild rumpus start. Perfectly chosen, crisp, simple, powerful words. Competitive advantage requires creating a perception of exceptional differentiation and then accentuating it. When you're successful at accentuating your market uniqueness, the consumer, the client, will redefine the competition as less desirable. Your brand is the cohesive story of your business, the identity of each product and service that people associate with the experience and expectation of your brand. And the fourth primary tool of influence, the mindset. Focus on the experience you deliver. A winning business engagement creates an emotional connection with the consumer to align with you. A story told by Simon Sinek, author of Start With Why, observed that all the signs of panhandlers had a similar message. I'm needy, please help me. He believed that by changing the homeless person's message, he could change the results. Simon found a street beggar in New York who's willing to work with him on his experiment. In talking with the woman, he learned that she received an average of $20 to $30 each day in an 8 to 10 hour day. If she got to $30, she considered it a great day. Simon convinced her to change the sign. Instead of focusing on her situation, homeless and hungry, he helped her craft a sign that said, if you only give once a month, next time think of me. The results were that in 2 hours, she collected $50. When the message shifted focus from her needs to focus on the experience of the passerby, the results increased significantly. This emphasizes that the focus needs to be on the person making the decision, not on the needs of the recipient, the presenter or seller. In other words, not on you. The message that we send are very subtle and often operate in a subliminal way. People are influenced either positively or negative at an unconscious level. When we send out messages that are about us, the quality, the benefits, the features of our services and products, we're going to receive less response. The more that we take as point of reference the recipients of the message and resonate with them, their experiences, especially their challenges, the more they're going to be willing to join in and create a mutual engagement with us. So think about the messages you communicate. Rather than beginning with the benefits of what you do or the facts and features, begin with the issues of the recipients, the challenges, the needs. What will someone pay you money for? They will pay you money for what they can't quite do or be themselves. So rather than telling someone about your experience, your credentials, training, focus on what's in it for them. No patient ever came to work with me previously as a psychiatrist and psychoanalyst because I was named one of the top doctors in America. No client has subsequently come to work with me as a mentor coach because I've written 20 books. They don't care, and they shouldn't. They want to know that I care about them. They want to know what's in it for them and get the sense that I confidently believe in both of us to do that, that I am loyally and passionately 100% dedicated to their success. And Teddy Roosevelt put it very succinctly, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Now, it's been said that there are two things people don't want to know how they're made, laws and sausage. I want to add a third. All of your qualifications and degrees and training and experience, clients want to know what's in it for me. Remember that our brains release dopamine, the pleasure chemical, when we anticipate a positive experience, such as just before spending money or anticipating a positive result. This emphasizes the role of hope and expectation in your message. Your message and mindset both center on your why. The most common difference between the best and everyone else is a compelling reason for commitment, the why. Martin Luther King gave the "I have a dream" speech, not the "I have a plan" speech. Meaning comes from contribution, something you believe in that makes a difference. You have to know what you're worth. I believe that when someone comes to work with me in mentor coaching, it will make a significant difference for the rest of his or her life. No strategy replaces integrity and caring to make a difference by connecting with others, to be genuine, to be authentic. Your why determines what you focus on and what you don't. The number one thing about the successful 1% of people, they're compelled by goals and dreams, having and knowing their why. People have a need to feel a sense of belonging. Before people decide what they think of your message, they're going to decide what they think of you. The drive to affiliate is among our most primary needs as humans. A fundamental effectiveness is the connection, to be understood, to make a difference for the other person. So, here's a summary application of what we've talked about of the influential story components. And these are bulleted in your outline, and then we're going to have a discussion. From birth, our brain's primary goal is to make causal connections. If this, then that. That's the unconscious operating system. So have that in mind as you develop your story. We don't think in abstract, but in specific detail. When something is more easily pictured or experienced, it seems more real, more believable. An active verb tense makes an experience more concrete and believable than a passive verb, which is abstract. Our brains are hardwired to want to be a member of a group. A good brand shares the same impact as we become confident in the predictability and trustworthiness of our brand, which is our story, basically. Every brand is a story, including history, expectations, promises, and emotions. Your brand is your internal organizer for what you do and why you do it. It's not something you're going to post on your website, necessarily. Your brand is a story. Stories are more important than facts in changing our minds. Passion brands create passionate followers. We buy something when it activates the part of our brains associated with our sense of self. We buy what's consistent with our identities. And finally, your authenticity is crucial. The most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself, to care. So, let the wild rumpus begin. Okay, we're in discussion mode. I'll ask again if you'll be sure and manage the background noise to mute star six. Your thoughts or questions or clarifications? Again, please mute star six so that we can have sort of an open mic here and a discussion. Thoughts or questions or clarifications? What's your take on this? Anyone want to comment or to question?
Yes, you've really got me thinking and trying to really clarify what it is that I want to inspire people with my work. And I love how you tie it to creating a story.
Well, great. I mean, that's the purpose to start you thinking. That's what activates the creative part of our brain. Think about what I talked about in terms of wanting to know what happens next. Think about the analogy here when you're working with a client and the client has an aha moment, a moment of insight. If we were to look at that client's brain at that moment, there are three different parts of their brain that activate. And that activation vaults someone into a different state of mind that is more creative and synthetic and integrated. Now, contrast that to what happens when we give a fact, information, detail, data. Nothing happens. No part of the brain activates. So this is the collaborative co-creation that we want to have with clients, and you just described it here. Even though we're not actively having dialogue, hopefully this has, as you're listening to what you say to yourself as a result of what we're talking about, hopefully that's what you take away, and to look at what you want to do with this information, to look at if this, then that. In other words, what's next? Mm-hmm. So thanks for making that comment. I appreciate it.
Yes, Scott.
Dr. Kruger, this is fabulous. Thank you so much. Can you just
talk a
little
bit? Okay, I'll tell you what. I'll make a deal with you. I'll talk to you if you call me Dave, okay?
Okay, Dave.
All right, go ahead.
Thanks. Can you just talk a little bit about the heart and the gut and how they activate the limbic system? Mm-hmm. Just give your few sentences on that.
Okay. What we know now from brain imaging studies, from especially neuroeconomics lab. I correspond with a couple and look at it in terms of money story. But what we know now is that people make a purchase decision up to 10 seconds before they're even consciously aware of it. People can actually solve puzzles. This is all within the last 3 years. People can actually solve a puzzle before they're consciously aware that they know the answer. The emotional part of our brain operates significantly faster than our emotional, than our intellectual logical brain. So this is the pathway that it happens. Whenever we see something, it immediately goes to the midbrain, to the thalamus. It goes to the part of a brain that sorts things and then passes it on to the hippocampus, which is what attaches meaning. And the meaning that's attached, this whole process is an emotional process at the midbrain, and then it boosts it up to the forebrain to make it logical and conscious and something that we can be aware of. So the hippocampus, by the way, since it's what attaches meaning, this is what psychoanalysts call the unconscious, because this is where we attach meaning. We have certain cues or symbols, and we attach meaning to it, and that then governs the associations we have and what sense we logically make of something. So that's how brands have a particular effect. You think of even a symbol of a brand. You see the swoop, the Nike swoop. Boom, you have associations to that and expectations. That's what you want to create with your brand and your name. So what that means is that people don't always associate or conclude the right things that are conscious and logical to the decisions that have already been made. Let me give you an example of that. Dan Gilbert at Harvard has done a study in which he showed people a word on a screen that was there for 1/50th of a second. In other words, it was an unconscious program, subliminal programming. What he did then was to test their responses afterwards. And what he found was that for the people, for example, when elderly was the word that was flashed, they would move somewhat more slowly, and they would not be as agile. And people who responded to the word stupid would not perform quite as well on tests. There are numerous examples. And when he asked people who were shown the word, and they couldn't even pick this word out of a multiple choice, when they were shown the word elderly and told what they did in response, they denied it. They said, well, no, I've been traveling and I'm jet lagged, or I've been having difficulty sleeping. That's why I moved a little more slowly. And they were shown then the video of the before and after, and they still didn't believe it. What this shows us, tells us, is that our minds and our brains both seek closure. Our minds seek closure, that we want to bring an end to the unknown, to the uncertainty, and our brains seek to end any dissonance, to bring closure. Never mind if it's not causally related. If the cause and effect don't fit, we still bring closure. And that's what this study showed. So that's what we have to be aware of, is how we think about things, how we have unconscious biases and assumptions, that we cherry pick things that are going to verify what we believe, confirmation bias, and we become unaware of things that don't fit what we believe, and inattentional blindness. So this informs what we do, so that it means that what we say to a client is going to be important. It means we need to connect emotionally, empathically with that client. We need to enter that circle and join with the client in talking about what their concerns are and move together to a new place. And the best supervision I've ever gotten from this was many years ago, while I was still practicing psychoanalysis before I made a transition in coaching. I offered an interpretation to a client, a woman executive, that I thought was pretty savvy. And there was a period of silence that followed. So I thought, something's up. And she finally got up on her right elbow, looked back at me in my analytic chair. She said, no, Kruger, first you've got to be with me before I can go someplace new with you. A brilliant, succinct way of saying this principle. We have to be with our client before they can go someplace new with us. Because when we are with our client, we have engaged a connection. That connection is mediated by the entire neurochemical system of oxytocin. That's the chemical of bonding. And here's a principle. We're going to return to talk about this, but I've got a couple of minutes, so I can kind of introduce it now. Here's a principle to keep in mind. The first few words that we say, or that someone reads that we write, the first few words are going to boot up a mindset that will process the entire remainder of the conversation. When those first few words are ones of connection and collaboration, then that boots up the neurochemical system of oxytocin that mediates connection and bonding and collaboration to move forward. If those first few words are ones that are perceived as challenging, as critical, as pejorative, or just simply instructional, it most likely will boot up a mindset that is mediated by cortisol and oxytocin, and somebody's going to enter the remainder of that conversation with a very different mindset, booted up and maintained by different neurochemical systems. So how you began a conversation is really important. This is one of the first things when I work with an organization to develop an internal mentoring program. This is something that we talk about right off the bat, conversational intelligence. This is about recognizing how what we say is going to make a tremendous impact on everything that happens subsequently. This is something really important for us as coaches to know. This is why we began with a collaboration as a model, not a problem-solving consultancy. Here's an example of how a consultancy model works. You go to a physician, and a physician, your consultant expert, you're motivated by pain, being scared. The expert makes a recommendation, maybe prescribes a medication. Less than 50% of those medication prescriptions are actually filled. So you consult an expert, less than half the time you actually follow the advice. of those prescriptions that are filled, less than 50% are complied with as directed. So even when you consult an expert, even when you're scared, even when you go to all the trouble to schlep across town and park and wait and expose yourself in all the waiting room bugs, less than 1 in 4 people actually respond. Now, think about the difference a different model can make. Our model in coaching is one of collaboration. Our model in influence, persuasion, neuromarketing is one that begins with resonating with the mindset and co-creating an experience with the client that's different, that will proceed in a different way to a different conclusion. So we're out of time, and I want to respect that. You have my email from that initial email you got. If there are questions that we didn't get to, please feel free to email me. If some of you have responses to those first two questions that I ask, I'm eager to see them and incorporate them into the discussion, and I promise I'll pay attention to them and will incorporate the responses in the discussions that we'll have in the upcoming seminar. So thank you very much. Thank you for your attention, energy, and especially all the responses that so many of you have sent, and feel free to email me with that. I look forward
thank
to
you,
picking
Dave.
Up
thank
right
you.
Here.
Thank you.
Next week. Absolutely. Have a great week, you guys. See you.
Thank you
for a great session. If you could stay on the line another minute, folks, we've got just a reminder that following the last session on February 6th, you'll get a survey that will help you, we'd like you to get your feedback. And you'll need the code from tonight's session. You'll need each of the four codes. Tonight's session's code is INFLUENCE, all in lowercase letters, INFLUENCE, INFLUENCE. This concludes tonight's session, and we thank you for your participation. Good night, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.